This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 300, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 300. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here, as always, for 300 times with Connor Kilpatrick.
Oh, it's been so many more than that.
I know. And Josh Flanagan.
It's like a million times.
Yeah, and technically...
That's what it feels like.
Technically, all three of us haven't done all 300 shows, as we've had lots of special guests through the years. But
I'm pretty sure we're all well over 300.
Yeah, I think so, too. So welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, 300th episode extravaganza. This is going to be a little different than the normal iFanboy podcast if you've listened to it in the past, because we are live streaming this on Ustream to more people than I thought would show up. So go with that. How many people are here?
That number was four.
Yeah,
all of our moms and Paul.
Yeah, there's like over 150 people there. Is that it? I don't know.
165 right now.
Wow, and sure more will be joining. So if we're a little different than usual, that's why. But the whole premise of the show is the same. We're from the website ifanboy.com, which is dedicated to the world of comic books, and we like to read comics. And every week, we rush off to the comic book store on Wednesday, and we read a whole big stack of books that come out. And one of us has the duty, the very honorable duty of finding the book that we enjoyed the most and declaring it the pick of the week, go and write a review on ifanboy.com, and then we come here to talk about it, as well as all the other books that came out this week, as well as other topics of interest that a lot of you in the listening audience have suggested to us, which is always fun. We're going to warn you that we're going to talk about what happened in the books. So if you weren't aware that the DC Comics line was rebooting, be warned.
Whoops.
Spoiled. So if you haven't read your books yet, you might want to press pause, come back, read them later. Those of you watching live, you're screwed, because we're going to talk about spoilers. And that's about it. I think that sums it up. This week, Josh had the responsibility of the 300th Pick of the Week podcast, Pick of the Week. Wasn't the 300th Pick of the Week, though. It was, I don't know what number that was. We should look that up later. But anyway, Josh, take it away.
It was I had more books than anybody, I feel like, this week. I know that, Connor, you had like...
I had six.
I had ten.
Six. That's I might have had like 10-ish or so.
You had 10 also.
But I finished up. You
he's
have all information
he's always
and
watching.
Numbers.
He's always yeah. watching.
You had 10. Put the book down. What? And I finished up and I was like, I don't know what to do here. Because like I read good books. And the thing about the Justice League that I want to be clear with is like... It was pretty good. Connor, you said that you did a review on it earlier. Like, it was a good book.
It was a 4-star. It was a solid 4.
Yeah, it wasn't like...
Not a 5, a 4.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the amazing... And I'm, of course, acutely aware that in the back of my mind, every time Jeff Johns releases a giant event book, it's my week. and I'd like to point out, I'm 2 for 3 now. So, you know, get over that. But I started thinking about what the book was and the things that I liked about it. And I was like, you know, this sort of general... enthusiasm, excitement, and symbolism of the book is really kind of a thing to get excited about. And I decided, you know what, I think this is the pick of the week. And then after I did that, I started thinking about it, and then I had all sorts of things to say about it, and that's how we came to be. You know, we've been talking about this for such a long time, again, thank you, DC, because you've given us something to do, and people seem to enjoy talking about it. That's what I've noticed. Whether you're for or against it, you know, you're down with it. But this is the sort of first step, and you do have to go ahead and give that company incredible props for turning that ship in a complete 180. And that's something I never, ever thought would happen. Like, we heard rumors about it beforehand, and DC is a company that really, I think even more than Marvel, sort of banks on their legacy, on their tradition, on their history. The characters go back further than most of the ones in Marvel do. And it's really, for the past 10 years or so, their thing has really, even Jeff Johns' thing has really been like, look at the legacy, look at the history. These things are all connected. And now they're saying, yeah, let's do something else. And I have to admire the chutzpah of that as I wrote my review. And it's really neat what they're doing. And I think that this was a cool first step, almost because they didn't try to blow our faces off throughout the whole thing. It was a slow burn, as I sort of called it. And we didn't meet everybody on the team. We didn't see them all together. They took the Ultimate Spider-Man approach where, you know, I remember what issue Peter put the costume on, but it was like 5 or 6 issues, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're one of the complaints about Ultimate Spider-Man back in the day, that it was super decompressed, that it took, like 5 or 6 issues before he got into the costume, and the story was really a slow burn. And that was my immediate reaction after reading this, is like, oh, okay, it's decompressed.
Well, Ron and I read it last year. Not last year. That'd have been awesome. We read it last week together. And
you do the voice of Hal.
Not together. I mean, like, I read it, then I handed it to Connor, and he read it. So
he had his arms around me. We read it, and it's a group.
I picture you in a clean room, by the way, with white suits.
And we both had the same sort of thought, in that it was good. We enjoyed it, but it felt somewhat slight for a big opening first issue.
Uh-huh.
What was in there, I enjoyed quite a bit. I gave it a solid 4-star rating, but I thought, if you're relaunching the universe and this is your first book, unfortunately, it takes the whole brunt of that relaunch on its shoulders, and you're going to really want something that knocks it out of the park. And I thought you wanted to go more the Grant Morrison JLA route, in which the entire team comes together and fights a menace. There's big stakes. There's big action.
Well,
there's big drama in the first issue. It really grabs you, whereas this issue, I have no doubt when all 6 are done, it's going to be a great 6-issue story arc that brings the team together, but... as a first issue, it was an interesting choice to go on the slow route. I don't know if it's the best choice, but...
I decided I liked that because you really did get characterization time when you get to see the relationships. And this was mostly, you know, Batman and Green Lantern getting to know each other for the first time. And
that stuff was great. I loved all that stuff.
Yeah. It's really, for me, it was what the book represents, what it's heralding, what it's going to be, what it... you know,
it's audacious.
I have, it gives me high hopes, basically. I was like, okay, this is a good first step. It wasn't, didn't try to do too much. They didn't try to be overbearing, I suppose. And I think that takes some balls. The other side of it is that, you know, Jim Lee's a bigger name than even Jeff Johns. He's about as big a name as you could get, other than if you got Frank Miller to draw, you know, like some sort of big 2 book. And that ain't going to happen.
Well, the 3 of us, you probably like Jim Lee the least. So tell us about your thoughts on the art.
I'm just not from the era. Like, I was reading comics right when he first showed up and then got out, you know, before he got like huge. And it's not my favorite style. Obviously, he's got skills. There's something about it that... it's just never exactly been for me. But I get that people absolutely love it to death. And the more I started thinking about this, and if you read my review, I said this, like, I realized he didn't have to do this. There's no part of him that needed to do this. So he had to want to, and he had to want the challenge of it. And as I was reading through it, he's a good artist, obviously, but I just feel like there was verve. There was energy. Like I felt youthful. It wasn't, you know, this is a guy who, listen, there are other guys out there who don't, you know, they'll be on a book, but really they'll just draw some of it and then somebody else will draw the whole thing. This just felt like a cohesive book, an artist who was hungry and wanted to show off what he could do. And you know, everybody, you know that everybody's watching this going, he's going to be late. He's not going to get these out on time. They're waiting for him to fail. And so it's his job to completely step up. And I've got to respect that. You know, who knows when he has time to do this? I mean, he's the co-publisher. He's probably in meetings and stuff all day.
Apparently, he just does it on the overnights because, as far as you know, on Twitter, he's tweeting all night. So I don't know when he sleeps anymore. But so can
I
share
afford Coke?
Can I share some of my thoughts? Because
you're a huge Jim Lee fan, and what did you think of it?
Well, art wise, I thought it was what I expected. I don't think this is the best Jim Lee. I think if you took this and compared it to like the last issue that we saw of All Star Batman. Batman and Robin, I think that probably was the point of like some of the best Jim Lee, or like I'm thinking the Green Lantern issue where they painted the room yellow.
See, I thought this was better than his Batman.
I thought there was a couple of points where I noticed a little like not Jim Lee's best, but still it looks fucking awesome and better than half the people out there who are imitating Jim Lee's style. So I thought the art was great. Story wise, though, I felt as decompressed. I was a little disappointed that the team, like you said, the team wasn't established, but I understand what they're doing. But the other thing that got me is that I thought Johns went a little too simple with it. I went through and
that's what he does.
Well, no, I know, but they almost to the point where they because they're so hungry for that new audience, that elusive millions of people who are going to download this that haven't been reading comics. I felt as if it took the assumption that no one's ever watched the Super Friends or seen the Justice League Unlimited cartoon or anything like that. I went through the issue and I counted the number of times the characters said each other's names.
That's good.
And it was like, well, no, yes and no, because it literally was 14 times. And there was one point where he got every character name in the same word balloon at the same time, which isn't easy, by the way. You know, because it's like here's the plan: Green Lantern goes in there and restrains Superman for questioning. Batman waits here, like all over and over again. Every time Green Lantern's like, "I'm Green Lantern, I'm gonna go over here because you're Batman and you're in the shadows, but we're gonna go meet Superman."
Yeah, but that's the kind of writing you like in the old Claremont books.
That's the thing. We were in my comic shop. We were talking about it, and someone's like, "But you love Claremont." I was like, "Yeah, but Claremont did exposition and wordy in a way that still moved the story. It wasn't constantly like Cyclops, go talk to Storm and see if you can get Jean Grey to do like it wasn't so bang over your head." And I just felt like I was getting banged over my head with who these people were. And admittedly, I'm acknowledging that I'm not, I already know who they are, so I've already been converted. Like, you know, I get that, but
not for you.
Yeah, but that said, you know, we experimented a little in the comic book shop and stuff like that, and had other people take a look at it and similar comments. That said, though, I did enjoy the Batman swiping the ring off Green Lantern. I thought that was the best scene of the entire book. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it made me laugh. It was a little humor. It was good. I thought the Cyborg stuff was the weakest.
There wasn't much to it.
Yeah, exactly. Did you catch the flashpoint, the reset button?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Josh, did you?
Well, we don't know what that means.
It's a tie to flashpoint. Yeah.
There's a lot more that ties to flashpoint. Yeah.
No, but did you see the woman in Justice League?
I know about the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for people who don't know, we're gonna talk about Flashpoint, but the catalyst or whatever to what happened to make the universe reboot. She's briefly in a panel, which I thought was interesting, and it's just, you know, like
I don't think that's gonna happen for a while.
Well, you never know.
I think that they would undo all of the support that they have slowly gained back. You know,
they're not going to do it for a while. They have to stick to
I don't think they can, to be honest with you. I don't think they can go back. But
no. That would be dumb.
Yeah. But, I mean, it also looks as if Jeff's, you know, Johns is paying attention to the story and, tying it in somehow for those of us. I mean, that was what I kind of took away from it. But we'll see. Who knows? But
I think the one thing we haven't talked about is that there's a lot of a sense of excitement, for me at least, that this is fun and new and interesting. And the GL characterization's fun. It's different.
Yep.
It's not the regular Johns characterization.
It's good because he's been boring.
Yep.
And I think that when you talk about it being simple, like, to me, that is Jeff Johns looking at what it is he does best and going back to the sort of roots of those things. And it, you know, if you look, he hasn't had the best last year in comics. And I think that maybe he's sort of reconnecting, like, get to the the very basic source of these things and these characters and the things that he does. Because I've always thought he wrote really simple. I didn't like him for a long time because of that.
I don't know. All week I was just walking around going, listen, I'm a space cop, okay? You're just like, it's just explaining.
that's the way that they have to be done if you want to get people who don't read comics for a living.
Yeah, but I don't know.
That's the way it is.
I can understand it if this is a brand new kind of thing, but I feel as if Batman and Green Lantern, because it was just a huge movie about it. They're in the lexicon. They're like,
you know, no one saw that movie.
Yeah. That's true. But yeah, anyway.
Because it was awful.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it all the time. The books that were hugely popular in the 80s were written like that. For people to pick up for the first time and say, who is this Green Lantern person? Well, it's all there in the page.
I mean, I definitely picked up on that was the goal of it. I'm just saying, you know, that was my kind of comment.
So Flashpoint number 5 ended the whole miniseries that got us to this point in the new world. And it felt very much like a lot of the DC books have felt this month. In that we got to get this over with now.
Oh, yeah.
Can I read that first, then I read Justice League, and I think I was very positive about Justice League. Obviously, I made a pick of the week. I was very impressed by it. It worked for me. I hated Flashpoint 5. It was fucking awful.
And you've been a big fan of the whole
thing. I have. Because what it was nothing.
Yeah.
It was just it was like, we're getting here. Oh, this story has nothing to do with anything. This is just the gateway to this new thing. And I hate that. Yep. I wanted a story. I wanted this to close up. I don't need you to tie it.
That's always been the point of it, though.
Yeah.
When I actually saw it done, I just thought it was kludgy and we're just getting pushed into this thing. I hate those between series that just exist to get you from one place to another, because all that is to appease people who need an explanation, and I think we're better than that.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I thought I agree with you that it was, I mean, it was almost laughable, the fact that it was like, okay, let's get all the characters in the same place at the same time. And I know that the super, like, and while that's happening, we get Reverse Flash kind of, you know, doing the villain thing and explaining what he's done and what the impact of it means. And you get a couple of nice moments with, you know, with Batman and stabbing the Reverse Flash and Superman arriving. But really, this is all just a catalyst to get Barry to the point to realize what he needs to do, which then, you know, triggered the timelines being merged or whatever it was. I thought it was really interesting, the big two-page spread where Barry's running across and the timelines are being merged, how they showed the DCU, the Vertigo characters, and then all the Wildstorm characters. I was like, oh, wow, they're being generous to the Wildstorm group.
Yeah, they got a big spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the thing is, though, there's no resolution to this story that we've been reading the whole time.
Yeah.
There's a huge war in Europe between the forces.
That hasn't been the story. The story's been Barry Allen trying to find his way home.
Yeah.
That's happening in the background. The war's in the background. The real story.
And what'd you spend all that time on it for if it doesn't matter?
All that time? You mean 4 issues?
And fucking 90 miniseries.
Yeah, because that was just a way to increase the global scope of and give you a taste of the world. But really, the story of Flashpoint, the book, this particular book, was in Barry Allen's journey home.
Yeah, that was the premise, and that was the main thing, was Barry figuring out how to get back, and then in doing that, triggering this thing, and then we see the mysterious woman with tattoos on her face or whatever, with the cloak, who becomes the voice, and that's the big question, is who was this, and what is, you know, what role does she play, assuming she's above Guardians and Monitors and all those kind of, you know, characters that have already been established in the DC universe. And I mean, admittedly,
I believe it's Lady Pariah.
Is it?
That would be a silly character. That's why I said that.
Okay. But you know, and you get a nice transition. You get, as Barry's running across the page, his costume slowly changes into the new costume. I don't know. And then I thought the end was, I mean, Connor, how did you feel about the very, very end when Barry goes to visit Batman in the Batcave?
It was all right. I mean, it was nice. I mean, some people really, I saw people talking about it online that really hit them hard. It was a nice moment, but I didn't get too overly emotional about it.
I don't think Batman cries. It's again
definitely about his dad. He does.
The Punisher
doesn't
cry.
But he doesn't do it in front of anybody.
Cry. Yeah.
Batman does, but he doesn't do it in front of anybody.
Keep in mind, this is also younger Bruce Wayne. Yeah. This is Bruce Wayne in his 20s.
Yeah.
So he definitely can cry.
With three previous Robins and a 10-year-old son.
Well, we're not. That's
we don't know that yet.
Comic time. Yeah, we do know it.
Yeah, we do know that.
Oh, right. You do know that. Well, there goes that. That's all I've been saying to anybody for 3 months. You don't know.
Well, so here's my question at Flashpoint. Does Barry know?
We'll find out. I don't think he does. I don't think he does know.
Well, he said he still has the memories.
Yeah, so Barry knows what happened.
That's the reset button.
The woman in the cloak and Barry are the reset button, yeah. So
Which may or may not happen, because they've always had people who knew about Crisis in the time before Crisis. They never undid it.
You're right. It may or may not happen. But the thing is that, like, is it going to be the kind of thing where Barry's going to acknowledge the fact that he went through all this and this whole thing, or is that memory going to fade, or what? I don't know. I mean, it seems as if he knows everything that happened, and what does that mean? Yeah.
Did you guys know that Batman has a very special belt adjustment tool holder?
Yeah, with lights.
He has a device specifically for fixing his belt at his desk. It's not used for anything else.
I just love that all this was resolved by Barry catching up and punching himself in the face. It's really what it was. It's like, stop doing it.
I hated this. I was so annoyed.
I know.
Because I was liking Flashpoint.
I think you had a misunderstanding what the story was, though. The story was about Barry.
The story was that it shouldn't have sucked.
Well, also, also, Connor, the art was really photorealistic, so that might have come
along. Now, the book
okay, that... all right. I'm going to put my balls on screen.
The book that... I'm surprised you still don't read, Josh, because Uncanny X-Force 14 is really good, and the Joe Mapena art...
Oh, my God. This was my pick of the week.
It was everybody's pick of the week, apparently. Yeah. This is one of those ones that I haven't... I went and I bought that 3-issue thing, and I haven't been able to figure out how to get back. I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
I want to. I'll buy the trades or something.
So first off, Uncanny X-Force number 14, chapter 4 of the Dark Angel saga. I don't know how many chapters it's going to go. But the big thing is Jerome Pena is back on art, and you noticed it immediately.
Absolutely.
Oh,
different. It's different. This is the difference between him and Mark Brooks.
It's not even fair. Like, it's almost to the point where I'm like, my God, it's not even fair. But then also, on top of that, the story was balls to the wall awesome. Like, Remender is really outdoing himself with this.
You went Long Island there.
Did I?
You said balls to the wall awesome.
But so essentially...
It was like an IROC Z.
So you get Wolverine and Psylocke and Phantom X and Deadpool back from the Age of Apocalypse world with the Life Seed, and they walk into the fact that now... Warren has become Archangel, and he's assumed the mantle of Apocalypse. What I thought was great is the flashback showing Warren kind of taking leadership of Ozymandias and all the horsemen and acting very different from Apocalypse. He's like, no, don't refer to me as sir, like, enough with the pomp and circumstance. Say that when you respect me. And like, you get a sense of who's in control. Is this really Warren just accepting this is the way to go, or is it the Apocalypse influence, influencing him? But it seemed really sincere and seemed like that's what he wanted to do. And you get an awesome fight. Wolverine gets fucked up.
Yep.
Like, fucked up. Psylocke, Betsy's role in it, how she, whether she can bring herself to kill her lover or not. I mean, like, there's so many levels this is working on. Like, this is right now the X-Men dream book for me right now, from the X-Men universe. Like, as great as Schism is, as great as Uncanny's been, Uncanny X-Force, I think, is the best mutant book right now, and it's tapping into all the stuff I love about the X-Men. So
it's the book that we used to talk about X-Factor being.
Yes.
It's the one that you can pick up and enjoy not being a big X-Men fan, or also enjoy being a big X-Men fan. It works on many levels.
Yeah.
Remender's clearly having a lot of fun with this, and the art, with a few exceptions, has been wonderful.
Yeah. It's not even fair. I mean,
it's at another level when Opeña does it. When it's Opeña and Remender together,
yep,
this book is a different level.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Really, really good stuff.
So good. So good.
But Secret Avengers, number 16. I thought it was going to be a sideways issue because the cover was sideways,
yeah,
but it wasn't
exactly
a sideways
that was
issue.
Interesting. I got to admit, if this was the creative team in this book would be one of the best books they're putting out.
Twice a year.
Written by Warren Ellis.
And not because of the artist.
Written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Jamie McKelvey. This was clearly done a long time ago. Because you get Cap and Steve in the Cap and Steve costume.
Steve.
Yeah. But I just love the premise on the first page, run the mission, don't get seen, save the world, Secret Avengers. Like, that was the premise of the book. Like, we talked about how troubled this book has been since it launched. And it never really got its legs under it. But like, this makes me, I'm like, oh man, this is the book I would have loved to have read.
Ellis gets the concept.
Yes.
Now,
he really does.
Yeah. He also gets, I don't think there's anybody better at doing a one-issue sci-fi story than him.
Yeah.
Like, he's the best at that. Now I haven't been reading this series, but I read this issue. There's no setup for this. Like, this just
No, this
started.
Is a one and done
That's
story.
Great.
You've got nothing to you can know nothing about the characters in the story. There's no continuation to what's happened before.
Yep.
It's very much on its own.
I think it was great. You know, it was Jamie McKelvey really stepping up, I think.
Well, yeah. I think there were two aspects to it. One, and we highlighted on the panels of the week, the two-page spread of Moon Knight flying over the empty city.
Yeah.
Like epic, grandiose, Mobius-esque. You know, like mm-hmm. just on so many different levels, it works so well. But then also, you know, Jamie's always gotten a lot of criticism that he can't do action or he just does people talking and stuff like that. This was action packed and I thought was great.
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely there's a couple of pages of there's two pages of Moon Knight fighting
basically. That way when he hits the Jeep full of people.
Yep. Dialogue, really good action stuff, and that was the stuff that impressed me most. I think if I had any complaints about it, it was a little bit too much. Clever jokey dialogue for me. I know that some people like that.
That's Warren Ellis at his best. I mean, yeah, I think
I know.
You know, in his heart of hearts, he hates writing this, but
does he though?
Yes, but he does it really well. That's the thing. This is him returning to that fun, badass. Everyone's smart. Everyone's cool.
Yeah,
superhero stuff that he's really, really good at.
Yeah,
he hates writing it, but he's really good at it.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, like I would never have thought to put McKelvey with Warren Ellis, but like they worked well together.
Yeah,
like really well.
Good pairing.
Yeah, it's a really, really good pairing. I love there's that one shot of Steve standing up in the car shooting the little gun with the three flechettes, and you see his eye like it's on the bottom panel. You see, it's coming out towards you, but McKelvey was able to get his eyes into the shot, and you really felt the momentum, the movement. It was just it was really good. Yeah.
You know what's interesting is I was thinking about it. I thought there'd be more backlash for this issue because it's really apparent that they're turning Captain America into more of a badass soldier killer. Than he was before.
Yeah.
I mean, he it's been a transition they've been doing for a while since Brubaker, but if you look at him compared to when he was in the 80s and 90s, he's almost a different character now. And I think it's fine. I think it's good for the character, but like he very sort of nonchalantly wipes out all these people and says, hey, we saved the world. You got to deal with it.
Yep.
And I really thought there'd be more backlash to that, but that's the way they've been evolving his character over the last 10 years.
Yeah. And I just love, that's a really good observation. But we're talking about how Warren's good at a one-off sci-fi. Like I love the concept, like that they built a city underneath Cincinnati and nobody noticed, and
a giant Doom platform. Like he just he'll find a little thing and be able to make it into a bigger thing.
Yeah,
that was what was really impressive.
So wish this wasn't just one issue. Oh God, I wish this was more.
You know what? You're better off.
I think next month's Kev Walker. He's doing a lot of good artists on these stories.
Yeah.
Is it Warren Ellis again?
Yeah, it's Warren Ellis doing one and done Secret Avengers stories.
Yeah.
That should have been the damn thing.
They blew this.
That's your damn book right there.
There's your book.
There's your book.
They blew this title totally. But
what Ultimate Hawkeye number one, Jonathan Hickman, Rafa Sandoval, and
This was Josh's special week with a new Hawkeye.
I don't really
book.
Care about Ultimate Hawkeye. Yeah.
No one does.
Neither do I.
That's what I realized after reading this. I like that Hickman's the new Ultimate guy. I think he's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think his sensibility is perfect for the universe. I think his sensibility is perfect for sort of being in charge of this whole thing. For the Ultimates, it was great. For Hawkeye, while the story was interesting, the setup was interesting, I don't really care about the character.
Yeah, like
he wasn't in it that much.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think this is actually about Hawkeye.
That's the thing. It's like Hickman did a great job. Sandoval's art was good. I'm not going to read the rest of the miniseries. I just don't care. Yeah.
I mean, the concepts are good. It's just I don't. Of all the Ultimates, traditionally, Hawkeye cared about the least.
Yeah.
And so a miniseries about him is kind of like, eh.
You know what's really interesting is that he is the one sort of character who they.
He's in the movie. That's why he's getting the mini.
Yeah, I know he's in the movie, but like they really didn't stick to what the old character was at all. He really is one of the only characters who's been completely reinvented.
Yeah.
In a way. Like he's got nothing of the old one other than he doesn't miss.
Yeah.
You know, he's got no charm.
And
he doesn't miss, Josh.
And I guess they're polybagging all the Ultimate first issues, I guess.
Because of the secret Stan Lee signatures.
Oh, are they? Did they really do that again?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, okay. That's that. Okay, so there's your answer. I didn't know that.
What is it I'm signing here? Yeah. Okay.
This was much less offensive cover-wise than the Ultimates.
It's true.
The Cary Andrews cover. Ugh. So bad.
It's true.
Anyway.
It was less offensive than a previous comic.
Yeah, less offensive. So
put that on a cover, please.
Less offensive, iFanboy.com.
it's honestly not that far off. Not that far off from what we've been outcoded previously.
Well, that's That's well, when it's one of mine, sure. But yeah, it's better than like when they're going with this the sales VP.
Yeah.
We can go with this one from the guy over in accounting.
Someone in the chat room said they had a friend who got one of the Stan Lee signed issues. That's pretty cool. So anyway, all right. So real quick, I want to take a quick break and remind everybody that iFanboy is a part of the Graphically Network, and Graphically is a great solution for digital comics. If you haven't checked it out, you're going to want to because they've got over 4,000 comics from publishers like Marvel, Boom, IDW, Dynamite, Archaea, Top Cow, all a bunch of great stuff. Over 250 publishers, more coming on every day, more books every day. Applications are available for Android devices, whether it's phone or tablet, my preferred choice platform, or iOS, or you can read comics on the web. Really super cool web interface to read comics. I think personally, you know, I'm biased because we work there, but I think it's one of the best out there. If you buy a comic on graphically.com on the website, you can go sync it and read it on your handheld device. It's really simple, really easy to do. Exciting stuff coming up in the next month or so from Graphically. So you're going to want to follow Graphically at twitter.com/graphically. We've got a couple pretty big announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks, so you're going to want to check that out. Go to graphically.com, check it all out now, get on board with digital comics, and we thank Graphically for their continued support of iFanboy. And if you like iFanboy, then definitely please patron Graphically, because without Graphically, we wouldn't be here. So,
can I spoil one of the announcements?
Which one?
We're going to be polybagging select issues of the digital comics.
Yeah, exactly.
Available for download.
You'll just get up one morning and your iPad will be in a Ziploc baggie. It'll be like, oh, that's great. I gotta say, one of those things, those announcements.
No, cool. You know what it is? Is you download the issue and you find it's just a polybag. You can't read it, so you gotta buy it. You gotta download another one to actually get the issue to read it.
That's how we're gonna.
It's gonna make our millions that way. Yep,
that's how it's gonna happen. Invincible number 82. This book, if you guys remember, when we way back in episode one, like this was our go-to book for
episode one.
Yeah, all right. Like we've always said, go read Invincible because it's sort of the superhero book for people who are kind of tired of superhero books.
It was right around that time. Yeah,
but like early those early days, it was one of our most frequent recommendations because we'd be like, because no one read it, so that's why.
Yep.
But what's interesting is that we're starting to see the change. We all saw, I think it was back at C2E2, they showed the cover of the black Invincible, and they were like, "We're not kidding. This isn't going to be him." And we're starting to see Mark back away. The last couple of issues have had this weird, like, philosophical stance. What great cover!
Great cover. I love when there's reflections. Like that's a great uh-huh. like that's a sign like for me that Otley, like we I know we rave about Otley, we love Ryan Otley, but like that cover, I'm like, oh man, he's still climbing, he's still getting it. Yeah.
Well, he went and he burned his art. Well, it's because he takes it really seriously. And he wants to get better. I enjoyed it. Like he's not trying to make every issue a thing. Like this book can just do whatever it wants. When I say a thing, like he's not trying to make it into a big, it has to blow your face off every time. This was like kind of philosophical and thinky, and
yep.
and Mark was like, I can solve this problem without going and fighting everybody. Because when I go fight everybody, people get killed, and it's true.
Yep,
these are ideas that should be explored.
It's this idea of the superhero maturing. You know, where like if you go back to the first seven issues of Invincible, it was like, yay, I've got powers, I could do this, it's fantastic. And over these 82 issues, we've seen people die, we've seen people get hurt, we've seen people come back to life. We've seen cities get destroyed.
Gain weight.
And now he's at the point, he's like, all right, well, maybe punching isn't the solution. And I think that's a great natural kind of evolution for the character.
So, yeah. Just a really good, fun issue. You know, nothing incredibly spectacular, but just another evolution.
Remember from a couple of weeks ago or months ago, I don't even remember anymore, but when I picked Invincible for the pick of the week, because it was just another issue. And it's just like, Invincible is one of the few comics that are keeping true to that 80s, 90s, 70s kind of style where, yes, there are story arcs.
All times, but now.
Well, no, you know what I mean. You know, but like, you know.
Well,
like,
the 60s.
Like Kirkman, aside from the Vulturemite War, Kirkman doesn't write for the trade. I mean, they collect the issues in trade format and put it in a story thing. But you can read those trades as if they were issues, just really longer issues, you know? So, I don't know. And that's why I like it, is because it reminds me of reading the X-Men back in the day and that sort of thing. So, but anyway, good that's enough. Just me.
Who's still reading Amazing Spider-Man? Are we beyond that?
I am, and I was really kind of souring on Spider Island. I was getting really worried. This issue was actually really good. I was somewhat surprised. It was really good. This is the part two of the Spider Island thing where everybody in Manhattan has spider powers. And what I thought was really interesting was, as opposed to dealing with whatever, Peter pretends as if he's just one of the people who gets spider powers.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Wait. Wait, now the story is that everybody in Manhattan has spider powers.
Yeah. So what happened was the jackal who, if you remember back, Jackal is the clone saga. The guy who screwed with them, done all this stuff. He did something to give everybody in Manhattan spider powers, and the chaos hit. And what happened was that all the Avengers were trying to help, but all these regular people were running around like spiders. And basically, the Avengers told Spider-Man to go home because they didn't know. They were afraid. They didn't know who was Spider-Man, who wasn't, because they're all in Spider-Man-esque costumes, and they're like, "You're just getting in the way." And so you had the Peter going, "Oh man, I never thought I'd be told that I got benched," and da-da. And then it dawns on him, he's like, "I can just be myself now," and so he just kind of steps up and he leads all the regular people to become heroes. And I got to give Dan Slott, it was a very good angle to take. So it was good.
Does he still keep his outfit across town?
No, he's just in plain clothes now.
I mean, in general, he still have.
Well,
the whole
yeah,
setup
I suppose
on.
It's still there, but yeah, right. And then there's a great scene where they're trying to figure out what the Horizon. Jameson makes the Horizon Labs try to figure out what the problem is, and Reed Richards comes to help them, but Reed's got to pretend that Peter isn't Spider-Man. So there was a nice little, like, it goes back to the whole secret identity thing. Like, it actually picked up some of the good things that is great about Spider-Man. And Humberto Ramos is just, it's so much fun to read Humberto Ramos.
The thing that bums me about not buying it is I'm not reading the Ramos stuff.
Honestly, Connor, I know it's tough, but go pick up this issue and tell me what you think, because it was better than I expected. So
I'm hot and cold in the slots.
I know you are, but the Ramos could put you over. I don't know.
Right. It looked good.
Yeah,
guys, has there been a more delightful miniseries this year than Rocketeer Adventures?
Miniseries of the year.
This is what IDW does, I figured out. This year, Rocketeer Adventures. Last year, Mystery Society. Year before that, G.I. Joe Cobra.
You're right.
Every year, IDW puts out four excellent issues of a miniseries and then some other stuff.
Yep. It was funny because I remember last year at San Diego when they announced this, we're like, oh, do we want Rocketeer stories by other people? Remember, like, we were really hesitant about it. We were really kind of worried. Now, like, yes, please. But then also I don't want them to ruin a good thing. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think four was the right number. I think three story, like, any more... They could have blown it, and they didn't. They kept it just right.
Yeah.
Well, you want to leave the stage when you're still, exciting. You don't want to be too long on the stage.
So this issue featured story written by Dave Gibbons with art by Scott Hampton. A story written by Joe Pruitt with art by Tony Harris. Another story written by John Arcudi with art by Brendan McCarthy, and then a couple pinups from Ashley Wood. That's a good lineup.
Jamie Grant did the colors on one of the stories, and I really thought that did not look good.
That was the Brendan McCarthy story.
Yeah.
Oh, I really like
the colors
it.
On that.
Oh well, they fit Brendan McCarthy style.
I guess.
I mean, have you read Brendan McCarthy before?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe. It was in line with Brendan McCarthy. So.
Okay. Listen, there was a badly drawn bulldog in one of the pages. I can't get over that. But the real story here, is that Tony Harris.
Awesome.
Wow, yep. He's getting away from photorealism.
Yep. Which is where he needs to be. When Starman started, he was drawing.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was fantastic.
Look at this. And this is what I hear he's going to be doing from now on for a little while.
Yep.
And just so nice. I was really impressed. And the era is perfect for him. Like, if you've ever heard interviews with him, he loves to draw stuff from the 30s and 40s. And, Japanese sub gunshots.
It was great. His drawing of the Rocketeer in costume and everything was awesome. Was honestly everything. I mean, like between Tony Harris drawing the Rocketeer. I love Brendan McCarthy drawing the Nazi Rocketeer version, the Lady Rocketeer.
That was cool.
That was awesome. I didn't love the art in the Dave Gibbons story. I didn't love Scott Hampton's art, but I enjoyed it. I thought the story was actually really good. Yep. I don't know. I just love the Rocketeer, and I just can't get enough of it. So, and did you see the news? It's coming out on Blu-ray finally.
That's what I'm going to eat for Christmas. I'm guessing, trade of this.
Yep.
The comic book put it over the edge, right?
Yeah, totally. I think that's what did it. Yeah.
That's how that worked. Totally.
It's awesome. Fine. So, Butcher Baker, The Righteous Maker, number 6 from Image Comics. I gotta admit, this might have been what I felt is that the strongest conceptual issue of the series, and they totally got me with the flashback. Are you guys still reading this or?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I've never started it.
Oh, Connor, you got to pick this up when it comes in trade. The flashback sequence I thought was genius, was great. There was basically it's a flashback to an earlier fight between Butcher Baker and the villain, and it's done in old comic book style. But then it's kind of a little smaller than the page, and you see the page fold. Like it was very clever. It was very good. I don't know. I'm loving this series. I mean, this series is very I want to say it's like a modern 80s alternative comic, if that makes sense.
So it's a Joe Casey comic book.
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
It's just not Marvel.
But yeah, really. But I don't know. Just every issue delivers in a way that I've never, you know, I don't expect, which I think is funny. I mean, it completely does. I mean, what did you think of it, Josh?
I think what you thought. It's alternative, while at the same time it's actually pretty straightforward. It's followable, which sometimes when you get out there is sort of difficult to do. I think that Jihad Jones looks exactly like Alan Moore, and I want to know if that's on purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's Alan Moore. I keep meaning to ask, but
I wouldn't be surprised. There you go. Yeah, so there you go. So those are the comics that came out this week that we enjoyed. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see them all in the pull list format, where you can do your pull list, you can come back and write reviews and do your ratings and all that fun stuff. And the iFanboy community is one of our most favorite parts of the week, to see what everybody's enjoying. And to celebrate that, we're going to go take a look at what the top five picks of the week, according to ifanboy.com, as of September 2nd evening. They might change when you hear this, though. So, Connor, do you want to go through the top five?
The top five picks of the week, according to the iFan base. Number five, Josh's favorite, Flashpoint, number five, with 1.1% of the picks. And you know, if number five is at 1%, we've got a big winner.
Yeah.
What will it be? Number four was Angel and Faith, number one, with 1.2%.
New from Dark Horse now.
Number three was Lock and Key Clockworks, number two, with 6.5%.
That was probably Paul's.
Number two was Uncanny X-Force, number 14 with 14.7%. And number one was Butcher Baker, Justice League number one, 73.3%.
Excellent. Not surprising, Justice League pretty much overwhelmed the whole comic book industry this week, which I thought was really, you know, because I thought Marvel had a really strong week. Of what came out, you know. So
I was putting the script together, and I was like, "Ugh, this is all Marvel. How can I?" That's right.
So so let's look at some of the reviews that came out of the iFanboy community. Josh, you want to kick us off?
Sure. First one up is from Benhawa.
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 Just an extra vowel in there. Talking about Herc 6.1. Are these ratings reliable?
No, there's still what people give books on the ratings is still have a bug in it.
Yeah, that's going to get fixed next week, so it's coming.
So we'll fix it. Pick of the week percentage on that is 0.2%, and he says the progression of going from Herc to iHerc has been a little rough at times. This 0.1 title brought the feel of the book back to somewhere between the two styles, and I like it. Out of all the 0.1 books so far I've read, this one stands out as being quite enjoyable. Sort of light praise. On a light week, you should definitely check this out. And I heard this is ending at issue 10.
Yes, so it got canceled.
This is your jump on point, sort of.
It's too bad, because I liked the premise that Van Lente was taking with it, which is basically like Conan on the streets.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess it didn't stick.
I just think it went on long enough.
Yeah, they did their thing.
So. Yeah, like, you know, it can go for a while, but I mean, that's a good run. It's been years.
Yeah.
No.
So. All right. So next review is, I was going to comment about how we're only talking about Marvel reviews, but then I remember DC didn't put anything out.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So our next review comes from Keith7198, who reviewed The Mighty Thor number 5, and 0.1% of you made it your pick of the week as well. And Keith7198 says, "One of the more disappointing books for me has been Matt Fraction's The Mighty Thor. Thor vs. Galactus, drawn by Olivia Copiel, just screams success. But after a promising first issue, the series never gained any strong footing. In fact, it's been all over the place. For me, the main story has dragged, while the two side stories involving Loki and Volstagg have kept my interest. Issue number 5 finally provides a taste of what I've been wanting from the creative team. Fraction puts together a sturdier, more cohesive issue here. The story moves at a crisp and more fluid pace, and at last there seems to be a genuine feel of danger." I flipped through this book in the store because I don't read Thor. I don't really like Thor, that sort of thing. But this looked beautiful. I mean,
well, he's fantastic.
Yeah, Copiel is just like, yeah, so good. So,
has it been only 5 months? I mean,
it's really
like it feels like it's been ages since I tried that book out, and it was not good.
Yeah, this is the original Hammer-based book, apparently. Yeah. This is where the whole Hammer thing started.
Is it really?
I guess.
No, this is the Silver Surfer Galactus versus Odin book. This has nothing to do with Fear itself.
Well, it's a Hammer. It's a Thor. Thor's a Hammer.
It's the original. It's rough. Rough one.
All right. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can check out all the books that came out every week. And you do your pull list and come and do your picks of the week and write your reviews and we'll get you on the show. It's great to see. How many, Connor, Justice League reviews were there? Like 30?
It was at least 30 last time I looked.
No shit, really?
A lot.
I saw there were 10 for Flashpoint. That was impressive.
That's awesome. So, anyway.
Halo effect.
Indeed. All right, so on to the emails. Our first email comes from Daniel Hampton, who says, listen, we all get which titles you like and which ones you don't, and also the characters you like and dislike. I was wondering about what about the characters we don't hear so much about, such as heroes who don't have their own titles or are overshadowed by larger characters in a team book. What I always wonder is if you go into more detail about D-list characters and find out your favorites. Mine, for example, are Drax the Destroyer and Martian Manhunter. So D-list characters, guys.
Well, up until very recently, I would have said Etrigan is one of them, but he's getting his own series.
Mm. He's not D-list, but he's B-list.
He's not up. Well, their series is not going to be around in a long time. But whenever he shows up, written by the right person, he's always fun. He's one of those. Recently, Rocket Raccoon is probably another one that's sort of like gone from being that stupid, and I don't know why you would put it in a comic book, but to, oh, that's so good. That's so much fun. Look at his big gun.
Mm. Connor?
you don't approve.
No, I don't disagree. That's fine. So.
Martian Manhunter's definitely around there. I don't,
he's B. He's B-list, right?
He's B. He's like B-plus.
He's B-C. He's B-C, really. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, because you put a Martian Manhunter book out there, it's going to get canceled in 5 months. He's a B-list character in the right book, but normally he's a C-list character. In the Avengers, I really like Jessica Jones still. You know, she's a really good character who's not used enough, but when she does get used, it's in the right spot, and it's still, you can still, when Bendis writes her, she's still a really interesting and different character.
I was thinking about when we were reading, like, I was reading some older Avengers stuff in the beginning of Bendis's run, that, you know, that other Ant-Man, the one who died, Scott Lang.
Yes.
Yeah. I like when there's like a new Ant-Man and he's like, hey guys, and he's wearing the same outfit as the old one and nobody really quite takes him seriously and he's always going to act like the new guy. I always liked that kind of thing. I liked that when Kyle Rayner was new. Right. I thought that was Kyle Rayner, Connor, is a
character.
Yeah. He briefly appeared in the DC
Universe. I don't
know who that is.
I have no
heard of Ion?
Speaking of Speaking of Scott Lang, one of my favorite characters that I feel as if I didn't get enough. Do you remember what was his name? Johns wrote him in the Avengers, and he's the dude that died that kicked off then he got resurrected to kick off the Avengers.
Jack of Hearts.
Yeah. And Jack of Hearts, I like Jack of Hearts because he reminds me of Connor, my favorite D-list DC character, which you know, my absolute favorite, Psycho Pirate.
Psycho Pirate is
your favorite. Psycho Pirate. Psycho Pirate.
Now, if you want to start going backwards, I used to love guys like the Black Knight on the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And,
love Black Knight.
Yep.
Dr. Druid. All those old teams from the 80s and 90s were fantastic C-level characters.
Yep, exactly. Uh-huh. Agreed. And I could go. I mean, I can go back deep into the whole X-Men. You know, like I'm a big Iceman fan.
Iceman's not a C-list character.
Iceman is a disrespected A-list character.
He's got to be grandfathered in because he's an original X-Men.
Yeah, true. And he's a disrespected B-list character. He's not A-list.
I mean, actually, to be honest, like up until very, you know, sort of recently, Hawkeye was always sort of a back, you know, like a B-list at least, you know. He wasn't supposed to be out front.
He's a strong B.
He's a strong B. I mean, he's been in everything. He's been...
we're not talking about boobs, right?
He ran the West Coast Avengers. He ran Thunderbolts. I mean, he was never...
Yeah, no, I'm talking about even before that, sort of when I first started to. Yeah.
There's also Green Lanterns like Kilowog, Tomar Rae. Like, there's a lot of those supporting characters that are fun. Yeah.
You know who I love? Who's the Batman... Slam Bradley. I love his like his confederates out there. Slam Bradley and what's her name, the doctor. I can't think of it right now.
Leslie Tompkins.
Yeah, yeah. Like I love those characters because they're these sort of smart characters who actually know a lot of things, but that, you know, who Batman trusts implicitly, and they're all very helpful. And I always like it when they bring those in.
The someone in the chat room just Peter Parker 18102 just suggested Snapper Carr.
All right.
So anyway, cool. All right, so on to our next email. Josh, do you want to take it away?
I certainly can. Jackie Tam says, now that all five Marvel movies that led to the upcoming Avengers movie are out, what are your top five? Here is a list, just in case you don't know them. Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America, the First Avenger.
So there have been five. What's the order you put them in?
What's the best?
Here's my order.
From five to one.
From five to one. And it's a matter of inches here, people, so don't jump down my throat, okay? I'm going to go Iron Man, Thor.
No. From worst to best.
Oh, from worst to best. Okay, worst to best. Yeah. I'm going to go Iron Man 2, Hulk, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man. And honestly, it's a matter of inches. It's inches.
That's my list. And Thor and Captain America are very close.
Yeah,
but it's
very
my
close.
List also.
Yep.
Iron Man 2, Hulk, Thor, Captain America, Iron Man.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the only difference. Yeah.
That's the list, and Captain America and Thor are on the same level almost.
Yeah. I mean, well, when we talked about when Captain America came out, I really enjoyed Captain America. I thought it was great. Thor was like one little notch above for some reason.
The top three we're talking about tons of fun.
Yeah.
And it could be, the two and three could be ranked either way.
And quite honestly, I think Hulk is very underrated. I really enjoyed that.
I enjoyed Hulk. I watched it recently. It was fun.
Yeah. Although,
on the other hand, Iron Man 2 is the most successful and forgettable movie of all time.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep.
I, for some reason, bought the Blu-ray, and I look at it and go, why?
Yeah.
I started to watch it on Netflix, and I was like, I don't care. I shut it off.
Yeah. And, like, it had so much potential because it had the suitcase costume and, like, all – but, yeah.
It had no story.
You were kind of bullish on it at the time, Ron.
I was, wasn't I? Yeah.
You were Sam Rockwell drunk.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell was great. Sam Rockwell was awesome. You see, that's the thing is like there are pieces like I really like Sam Rockwell in Iron Man 2. I really like the whole World's Fair thing. I really like the suitcase, but like I felt as if and as much as I love Mickey
Roger Sterling,
Roger Sterling. As much as I love Mickey Rourke, I felt as if the villain fell a little short, and I don't know. But and Hulk, I love the whole. Honestly, like I could put in Hulk and watch the opening sequence in Brazil. And be satisfied. Like, that could have been the movie. Like, that was awesome.
Oh, that was a great sequence.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah.
I love Eric Bana. Just saying.
Really?
That was the other Hulk.
Yeah. I know that, but I'm just saying,
he was like, a great Hulk, too.
How do we think...
He's a great actor.
How do we think Mark Ruffalo is going to be?
He's good. He's good for that.
He's a great actor.
I love Mark Ruffalo. Yeah.
He's a really good actor, and he's got that... I think he's got that simmering rage but calm guy thing.
Yeah.
Because he's got damage. He's got issues, that guy.
He does. All right, so if you have any questions, you can always email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We're here for you for any of your questions, be them comic book geekery or fashion tips or dating advice or job advice. We're here for you.
Really?
Sure.
Your job advice?
No, I don't know.
take the job. There's nothing out there.
Exactly. So email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Normally we do voicemails on the show, but since we're doing it live, we're going to take some questions from the chat room, and I'm going to vamp a little because I think there's a little lag, so I want them to hear it. So you can normally call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. But in the meantime, we're going to take some questions from the chat room, and they seem to be coming in now. So we're going to start with our friend Chris Niesman, who's in the chat room, who says, what creators' careers have skyrocketed since you started the show that you're most excited about? That's a very good question. So we've been doing this for 300 episodes. What creators are we excited for their careers since?
Well, I mean, the first thing, we were just talking about how we used to recommend Invincible all the time.
Kirkman has skyrocketed in the last 5 years.
Yeah. That's why he still talks to us, because he was nobody when we started.
Yep.
Kieran Gillen clearly has skyrocketed in the last 5 years.
Totally.
Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, my God. The chat room's going far too fast.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. Other guys I was thinking of. I mean, I was listening to the Rick Remender interview you did recently.
Yep.
And from where he started to where he is now is pretty fascinating.
Remender, Hickman, Aaron, all those guys in the last 5 years have blown up. So
we definitely had a nice little class come up with us at the same time. And like when we started, when we started doing the video show, we just discovered Remender. You know, Hickman had just started. If you look at
Jason Aaron just started Scalps. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which smaller publishing companies are your favorite?
What's smaller mean? Smaller than Marvel and DC? Then it would be Dark Horse and Image. But
yeah.
Smaller than that, I used to be a really big fan of Top Shelf, but they haven't really
in the past year. Yeah,
in a while,
more than a year, I think.
Yeah.
I think that in that way, Oni for me has been pretty big. They've got a couple of really good sort of ongoing things, and then they're constant, not all the time, but they'll release something that's really exciting, something that I really like on a fairly consistent basis, at least a couple of times a year. That Petrograd book for me is gigantic. I love that.
I just finished that. That was fantastic.
Petrograd was amazing. It? Oh my God, it was great. It was so good.
I finished it like 3 days ago. It was awesome.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, Oni's done good stuff. Oni's consistently done good stuff, I think. They haven't dropped off like Top Shelf has.
Yeah.
No, but they've focused. They've sort of changed things around a little bit. I'm trying to look at my books and see if I can think of a different thing. But I don't know. I don't feel like I've been able to keep up with small press as much as I used to, which I don't like.
Yeah.
Somebody asked if we're going to make it to 600 episodes.
Good time.
You know, every week is sort of a... it's just sort of a little victory in itself.
Okay,
yeah, somebody mentioned that Top Shelf released League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I bought, I don't know, whenever it came out a month ago, and I haven't even opened it.
Yeah.
Still on my shelf, my to-read pile.
So Yeti Hands...
You haven't read it either?
Yeti Hands asked, what is your favorite piece of original art you own? And now that we all own a little bit of art, what's your guys' favorite pieces?
Oh, my favorite original art piece is from Transmetropolitan issue 1, page 5 or 6. It's Spider still is all hairy, and he drives down the mountain, and he looks at the bar that he went to, and he's like, "Ah, Bastard's Bar, remember that? And I hate everybody in it." And he blows it up with a rocket launcher and drives away. And the reason that it's fantastic is because it's Rodney Ramos inking Derek Robertson.
That's the right thing.
It's a perfect match. And the board's lettered. It's before digital lettering, so all the letters are on there. Besides that, I love all my. I don't have that many pages, so I love all the ones I have. I have a page from Box Office Poison that I bought a long time ago. That's fading.
We didn't ask for you to tell you.
Recently,
just the favorite.
Yeah,
come
just,
on,
what's your favorite?
Don't be greedy.
There's one more that I got recently that is just the greatest thing ever. It's the page one from an issue of Next Wave, where Steve Rogers goes into a bathroom and breaks it. Mike Stewart Eminem.
Any more pages you got? You want to talk about?
Connor, what's your favorite piece of art?
My favorite page is from Jonah Hex 50, the Darwin Cook page, and it's the page where Tallulah is he's carrying Tallulah away.
Yep.
And it's a fantastic page.
That's a good page. I have too many. I can't pick one. I guess the latest one is I have
the Quietly one.
Yeah, from New X-Men number 138 when. The last page when Emma walks in on – no, when Jean walks in on Scott and Emma, and Emma's in the Phoenix costume. Mm. Yeah, that's my gem right now. So I love that.
It's a gorgeous page.
It's a gorgeous page. It's a gorgeous page. And I also like that the fact that I own it, people who work at Marvel want my throat. So which is kind of funny. But anyway.
Josh in the chat room, somebody says, I can draw a circle. Does Josh want to buy it?
Ron has so many more pages than I do. I'm talking about over a 10-year. I've bought one page in the last I think I've only bought one page since we've been doing this, and it was $75.
Yeah, no, I clearly have a problem. I mean, I think I'm up to 32 pages now.
Yeah, I mean, I bought those Transmetropolitan pages for nothing a long time ago.
Well, yeah, no, but no, by no joke, I don't want to I bought the Quietly page when he was here in San Francisco for WonderCon, and I have not. And Connor can attest to this. I have not bought a piece of art since.
No,
because it wasn't cheap. Yeah, it was.
Or paid the bills.
The circuit.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, they're going to kill the cable in about 10 minutes, so we need to wrap this up. No, but normally, San Diego, what I do is I always buy one piece of art in San Diego, and this year I'm like, no, I already did it at WonderCon, so I'm good. So you got to balance a little. So
Next Champion asks what our favorite moment in 300 episodes is. And I always go back to every time we hit on a riff of something that makes us laugh, every time we come up with an original character or something like that. And I was reading a Scott Chandler book the other day, and I can't say his name out loud without thinking because we were making fun of 40s radio dramas. And it's Ron's voice saying, Scott Chandler, and, oh, Nazis. And then somebody rattled a like a sheet like to make like thunder. Like,
yeah. The chat room's reminding me of my almost stroke when I said when I couldn't pronounce Rusty Auto Parts. which to this day I will listen to and will make me cry from laughing, because it is just a moment of pure, you like all three of us laughing, just pure, just, you know, yeah. So that was a good time.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, and they're all like the Black Panther bad roommate one.
Oh, Middle Management, you know, Skull.
Yeah. Middle Management Skull, just.
A lot of people are mentioning Josh knocking over the Lego TIE Fighter, which was like episode 2
exactly,
or 3.
Yeah,
that was really far. I think I have it. Hang
don't go
no,
back.
No. Just keep it. It's fine. We believe you. Josh, somebody's asking you for the Muppet Steak Manhattan frogs.
Ocean breeze soap for people who don't want to stink. I believe Phil and Lil. Gil.
The funny thing about that is that I went to go see the Muppets Take Manhattan at the Museum of Moving Image in New York with, I took my nieces, and Josh totally called it. He's like, you were the only person laughing in the theater during those scenes. And I was like, I was dying.
I'm going to do Mark Wahlberg. I'll do Mark Wahlberg because it always makes Ron laugh. Okay, we're going to do a podcast, okay? Are you going to love me? That's Mark Wahlberg's thing, is that his characters always want to be validated.
Yep.
Mm. Are we going to all talk about comics? All right. That'll be good, okay? Let's do this, okay? I'm going to fight for you, okay? We'll fight.
I'm going to love you, okay?
Do it.
Oh, they're great.
That starts as Wahlberg and ends as the guy from the Real World.
Yeah.
They're from the same place.
All right, let's take one more let's take one more good comics question, and then we'll do the fan service after we finish recording. So we got one good comics question, and I'm not saying Spawn. Oh, shit, I just did. Oops.
Anything from the 90s.
I miss gimmicky covers. And I don't care what anybody says, because when that Ghost Rider cover with the glow in the dark came out, that was badass. And actually, did you see the trade paperback for Ghost Project from Oni? It glows in the dark. I was in the comic book store the other night.
I did see that.
Yeah, I was in the comic book store the other night, and James was shutting it down and turned the lights off, and all of a sudden the cover glows. I'm like, the cover glows! Like, we joke about it, but when Punisher Warzone came out with the die-cut hole, the bullet holes, and, like, those were cool things. Like, remember the Wolverine cover with the Wolverine number 50 with the slash through it? And you open
Connor, are you fading out too? Because I don't think he's talking to us, but
no, seriously, right? I mean, like, those,
they
like,
were cool when I was 13.
They were, I mean, no, I would buy a comic right now if it had a die cut cover. That they are awesome. I don't care what anybody
says.
You're
the problem.
No, I'm not the problem. I think everybody would agree with me as well. I mean, like,
if everybody did it like me, the comic industry would be really healthy right now.
Listen, when Bloodstrike came out and you could rub the blood, that was possibly my favorite moment in the 90s. So. I don't know. I like gimmicky covers.
And at that moment, the industry almost died.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think they're fun. I'd rather have a gimmicky cover than a polybag cover. So a polybag-ish comic. So there you go.
You want a gimmicky cover in a polybag. It's funny. The first comic that I bought when I came back to buying them, I was like 97 or 98, was the Superman Forever or Superman whatever lenticular Alex Ross cover.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes. That was bad. And Jimsky in the chat room, I did not make up Bloodstrike. I have that issue. I know the person who wrote the copy that said rub the blood. It was red ink. It's
every time you say rub the blood.
Rub it.
Rub the blood.
Rub the blood.
Anyway, all right. So awesome to take questions from the chat room. Hopefully we'll do this again soon, because we got a better setup for it. And it's been a lot of fun. And if you missed it, if you're listening to this recorded, you missed out on all the fun, and you'll want to look at it on iFanboy.com for the next time we do it. But in the meantime, you should also go to iFanboy.com where we have a – someone just wrote rub the blood, okay? I'm going to rub the blood, all right?
All right, so I got the cover right here. What am I going to do with it, all right? I'm going to rub it? I'm rubbing the blood, okay? Why don't you just let me do it? I'm going to be a big, bright, shining blood rubber. Calm? You don't even know. I'm good at rubbing blood. You don't know that.
Oh, God almighty.
I'm going to rip a poster down.
What about Eddie Vedder rubbing the blood?
I love doing Eddie Vedder. A lot of these guys used to do covers back in the 90s, and we would do things like rub the blood or glow in the dark covers. It was a crazy time. But now, what the fuck? No, I don't. now Josh does a full rendition of Porch Unplugged. Hang on, let me get the guitar.
Yeah. go to iFanboy.com. We got great stuff there, including the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast. This week, we're going to have Chris Niesman is back in the swing of things, and he spoke to Jeff Lemire about Animal Man number one, which is coming out this Wednesday, which is my personal pick for what I think is going to be the surprise hit of the new 52. So it's going to be really exciting to hear what Jeff Lemire has to say about his new series, Animal Man number one. So go to iFanboy.com on Monday or Tuesday. I don't know. It'll be up because of the holiday.
It's a holiday. It'll probably
be up Monday because I have nothing to do on Monday.
Probably. So whatever. There.
But and go to iTunes and subscribe to that podcast. It's a great little 15-minute podcast where we talk to creators about books that are coming out every week, and you definitely don't want to miss it. So go to iFanboy.com and get Don't Miss.
Don't Miss podcast is what you just talked about, and I'm going to tell you to go to iFanboy.com for the pick of the week review that I wrote and the book of the month review that I wrote that's there that might not be there very soon. There'll be a new one very soon, but those are always worth reading, and all sorts of stuff. I've been writing a lot of opinions lately, and I'm probably going to become more hated as I keep going.
We're
going to
have a new book of the month soon, too.
Yeah, that's what I said.
If you want a preview, look in the monitor. Don't say it, though, Josh. Just keep talking.
Oh, really? Shit. Good call.
I want to read that a lot.
That's going to be the book of the month.
That's pretty badass. All of our other stuff is at iFanboy.com. All the writers, many of whom are in the chat room right now and the conversations. The conversations have gotten really interesting, I think, since the new site because the comments work a little better. And so that's good. You can go and see all of our social network sites there as well and places you can interact with us otherwise. And there's also the video show, which you can find over in the left nav of the site. And last week, Connor manned up is what he did. He went and he talked to Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, and Scott Snyder, and we had it up the next day about this thing that DC's doing. You may have heard.
Very tired the next day.
Yeah, I bet. And then next week we'll be it's a vault show, people, about some black and white books.
Cool.
Yes,
that's the threat.
It's as racist as they can get.
It's awful. So, as
that
I mentioned,
Sibian joke won't die.
As I mentioned, I was going to do that at the end. As I mentioned earlier, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always email us at contact@fanboy.com. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can leave a voicemail on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697.
And finally, if you like this show, the Don't Miss show, or the video show, or any of the shows, even a crappy show like 11 o'clock comics, you can leave a review on iTunes. Tell them you like it or don't like it. Tell them it's crappy if it is. Yeah.
Or if you're one of those pros who's constantly going, those guys don't know anything about how this works, does it?
Yeah, just go to iTunes. It helps people find the show when they're searching for comic book shows to listen to. We really appreciate it. It takes you only a few minutes, and thank you.
Yep. So, cool. All right, well, this is a lot of fun. We want to thank everybody for coming out to watch it in the live chat room. And if you liked, if you missed it, you want us to do it again, whatever, let us know. Maybe we will. These are the kind of things that podcasts like 11 O'Clock Comics will never do for you because we're iFanboy and we love you.
We like you.
Yeah.
And if you're around, we're going to stick around and do some chatting. And if you weren't on the live show and you're listening late, come next time. You'll get to chat with us after the show.
Exactly. So, until next time, we're going to wrap this up. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.
You were going to do Arthur Vermain there for a second. But
I missed it. That's what I did there. I missed it. Hold on.
The Sibian setting got turned up a bit.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.